lesson tonight is Joshua chapter 12 in its entirety. These are the kings of the land whom the children of Israel defeated, and whose land they possessed on the other side of the Jordan toward the rising of the sun, from the river Arnon to Mount Hermon, and all the eastern Jordan plain. One king was Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon, and ruled half of Gilead, from Aroer, which is on the bank of the river Arnon, from the middle of that river, even as far as the river Jabbok, which is the border of the Ammonites. And the eastern Jordan plain is from the Sea of Chinneroth as far as the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, the road to Beth Shemma, and southward below the slopes of Pisgah. The other king was Og, king of Bashan, in his territory, which was of the remnant of the giants, who dwelt at Ashtaroth and at Edrei, and reigned over Mount Hermon, over Salcah, over Bashan, as far as the border of the Geshurites and the Nakathites, and over half of Gilead to the border of Sihon, king of Heshbon. These Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and the children of Israel had conquered. And Moses, the servant of Yahweh, had given it as a possession to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh. And these are the kings of the country which Joshua and the children of Israel conquered on this side of the Jordan, on the west, from Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon, as far as Mount Halak, and the ascent to Seir, which Joshua gave to the tribes of Israel as a possession according to their divisions, in the mountain country, in the lowlands, in the Jordan plain, in the slopes, in the wilderness, and in the south. The Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The king of Jericho, one. The king of Ai, which is beside Bethel, one. The king of Jerusalem, one. The king of Hebron, one. The king of Jarmuth, one. The king of Lachish, one. The king of Eglon, one. The king of Gezer, one. The king of Debir, one. The king of Gader, one. The king of Hormah, one. The king of Arad, one. The king of Libna, one. The king of Adullam, one. The king of Machadah, one. The king of Bethel, one. The king of Tapua, one. The king of Hafer, one. The king of Aphek, one. The king of Lasharon, one. The king of Madon, one. The king of Hazor, one. The king of Shimron-Meron, one. The king of Akshah, one. The king of Taanach, one. The king of Megiddo, one. The king of Kedesh, one. The king of Jokneam and Carmel, one. The king of Dor in the heights of Dor, one. The king of the people of Gilgal, one. The king of Tirzah, one. All the kings, 31. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Please be seated. Joshua 11 ended with a review of Joshua's conquest in the land. And the final verse provides a summary. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that Yahweh had said to Moses, and Joshua gave it as an inheritance to Israel according to their division by their tribes. Then the land rested from wars. Now that's how chapter 11 ended, and chapter 12 turns from the city of the land to its kings. But it actually begins on the other side of the river. This chapter rehearses Moses' victory over kings across the Jordan River before reciting the list of kings conquered west of Jordan in the land of promise. And we'll consider this passage according to a two-part outline. First of all, the kings conquered by Moses in verses 1 through 6, and then the kings conquered by Joshua in verses 7 through 24. This sacred history reminds us that Joshua was a worthy successor to Moses, and that Yahweh, the Lord God, was faithful in leading his people to conquer these kings. We'll begin with kings conquered by Moses in verses 1 through 6. Verse 1, these are the kings of the land whom the children of Israel defeated, and whose land they possessed on the other side of the Jordan toward the rising of the sun, from the river Arnon to Mount Hermon and all the eastern Jordan plain. And children, I have a question for you. Does the sun rise in the east or the west? Right. The sun rises in the east and it sets in the west. So when the writer refers to the land they possessed on the other side of Jordan toward the rising of the sun, he is writing from the promised land And he's looking eastward across the Jordan River. And that is the other side of the Jordan. Now, there were two kings Israel had previously defeated in that region east of Jordan. And this passage deals with each in turn. We read about the first one in verses 2 and 3. One king was Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon and ruled half of Gilead, from Aroer, which is on the bank of the river Arnon, from the middle of that river, even as far as the river Jabbok, which is the border of the Amorites. And the eastern Jordan plain, from the Sea of Chinneroth, as far as the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, the road to Beth Shemoth, and southward below the slopes of Pisgah. Now, the victory over this king is not recorded in the book of Joshua. That took place prior to this. As Israel had made their way through the wilderness toward the promised land, they had to pass through territories that were ruled by various kings. Sometimes these kings gave them passage, sometimes they did not. And Yahweh gave Moses specific instructions regarding Sihon the Amorite. Since this wasn't in Joshua, we will review it. Turning back to Deuteronomy chapter 2, we read in verses 24 and 25, "Rise, take your journey, and cross the river Arnon. Look, I have given into your hands Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. Begin to possess it and engage him in battle. This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the nations under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you." Yahweh told Moses his victory over Sihon would begin the process of putting dread and the fear of Israel upon the nations. It was a signal victory that would often be later celebrated. And we read about it as we read on in Deuteronomy 2, picking up in verse 26. "And I sent messengers from the wilderness of Kedemoth to Sihon, king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, 'Let me pass through your land. I will keep strictly to the road, and I will turn neither to the right nor the left. You shall sell me food for money that I may eat, and give me water for money that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot, just as the descendants of Esau who dwell in Seir and the Moabites who dwell in Ar did for me until I crossed the Jordan to the land which Yahweh our God has given us.'" Now, this seems like a very reasonable request. We need to pass through your land to get to the land where we are headed. Please let us do so, and as we go, we will give you money for food. We'll give you money for water. We're not going to take anything from you without providing that in exchange. But we continue to read, "But Sihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass through, for Yahweh your God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate, that he might deliver him into your hand as it is this day. And Yahweh said to me, 'See, I have begun to give Sihon and his land over to you. Begin to possess it, that you may inherit his land.' And Sihon and all his people came out against us to fight at Jahaz. And Yahweh our God delivered him over to us, so we defeated him, his sons, and all his people. We took all his cities at that time, and we utterly destroyed the men, women, and little ones of every city. We left none remaining. We took only the livestock as plunder for ourselves, but the spoil of the cities which we took, from Aroer, which is on the bank of the river Arnon, and from the city that is in the ravine as far as Gilead, there was not one city too strong for us. Yahweh our God delivered all to us." Now, the description of that victory should sound very familiar to us. It's described in terms very similar to the victories we've been reading about in the land of Canaan. We're told that Yahweh delivered these people into the hands of Israel, who then engaged in holy war, utterly destroying the men, the women, and the little ones in every city, and then taking some spoil for themselves. The victory was absolutely complete, making it possible for Israel to begin to possess the land as part of their inheritance. This was sort of a foretaste of what was to come in the promised land. What Joshua in chapter 12 then next tells us about Moses' victory over Og. Verse 4 in chapter 12. "The other king was Og, king of Bashan, and his territory, who was of the remnant of the giants, who dwelt at Ashtaroth and at Edrei. And reigned over Mount Hermon, over Salcah, over all Bashan, as far as the border of the Geshurites and the And again, we read of this victory in the book of Deuteronomy. It immediately follows in Deuteronomy chapter 3. Then we turned and went up the road to Bashan. And Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And Yahweh said to me, "Do not fear him, for I have delivered him and all his people and his land into your hand. And you shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon." So Yahweh our God also delivered into our hands Og, king of Bashan, with all his people. And we attacked him until he had no survivors remaining. And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we did not take from them. 60 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. All these cities were fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides a great many rural towns. And we utterly destroyed them, as we did to Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. But all the livestock and the spoil of the cities we took as booty for ourselves. And here we learn that we're not talking about just one city. We're talking about 60 cities that were part of this kingdom, and these were well-fortified cities with high walls, gates, and bars. And yet they were not able to stand against the forces of Israel as Yahweh delivered them into their hand. Og was also particularly notorious. You read one more thing about him in Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 11. "For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Indeed, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. Is it not in Rabbah of the people of Ammon? 9 cubits is its length, and 4 cubits its width, according to the standard cubit." Now, Joshua tells us that Og was of the giants, and Deuteronomy tells us that he was the only one who remained of the giants. And he slept in a bed that was 9 cubits long. That's about 13 feet long. I measured our bed this afternoon. It's a queen-size bed. It's 7 feet long. So this is almost twice the length of a queen-size bed. And it was made of iron to support this giant. Og was one big guy. But his size and his military strength were no match for the Lord. And Joshua 12 sums up the victories over Sihon and Og in this way, in verse 6. "These Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and the children of Israel had conquered. And Moses, the servant of Yahweh, had given it as a possession to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh." Now we might ask ourselves, why does Joshua 12 interrupt the story of the conquest of the land with this flashback to previous victories elsewhere? Well, let me suggest a few possible reasons. One thing is that it emphasizes the continuity in leadership from Moses to Joshua. Remember when we looked at Joshua chapter 1, there was sort of this question hanging in the air. Would Joshua be able to follow in the footsteps of Moses as the leader of the nation of Israel? And this is answering the affirmative and linking these victories of Moses to the victories of Joshua attest to this. Secondly, as already mentioned, the victories of Sihon and Og were signal victories that set the stage for the conquest of the land. By them, Yahweh began to put the dread of Israel into the hearts of the nation. Recall the testimony of Rahab back in chapter 2. She said to the spies, "For we have heard what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who are on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. And the Gibeonites, who deceptively entered into a covenant with Israel, had a similar testimony that they also had heard about these victories over these kings." But perhaps most importantly, rehearsing these earlier victories east of Jordan placed emphasis upon the unity of Israel. Those in the land west of the Jordan needed to remember that the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh were their brothers, even though they lived across the river from them. Yahweh had given them their land in the same way that he had given Canaan to the other tribes. And so mentioning that at this point heightens the significance, the importance of the unity of Israel. Well, after dealing with the kings conquered by Moses, the narrative turns to kings conquered conquered by Joshua in verses 7 through 24. Oh, we have an introductory statement covering geography and some of the tribal groups in verses 7 and 8. And these are the kings of the country which Joshua and the children of Israel conquered on this side of the Jordan, on the west, from Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon, as far as Mount Halak and the ascent to Seir, which Joshua gave to the tribes of Israel as a possession according to their divisions, in the mountain country, in the lowlands, in the Jordan plain, in the slopes, in the wilderness, and in the south, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now, there at the end of verse 8, there are six nations listed that were defeated by Israel. And victory over these nations had been prophesied through Moses. Turning back to Deuteronomy, let me read from Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 and 2. When Yahweh your God brings you into the land that you go to possess, and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. Now all the nations mentioned in Joshua 12 were mentioned in this word in Deuteronomy 7. But there was one difference. Did anybody pick up what the difference was? How many nations were listed by Joshua?
Six.
How many were listed in Deuteronomy?
Seven.
And the difference is the Girgashites. The Girgashites are mentioned in Deuteronomy. They are not mentioned in Joshua. Well, why aren't the Girgashites listed in Joshua 12? We don't know. But that never can stop a pastor from speculating. So let's just think about this. Matthew Henry cites Jewish tradition that the Girgashites fled the land as Israel approached and resettled in Africa. Now, that could be possible since the promise in Deuteronomy refers to driving out of the land as well as destroying in the land. Perhaps the Girgashites, like the Gibeonites, rightly estimated that resistance to Israel would be futile, and rather than seeking to enter into covenant with them, they just fled for their lives. However, we do find the full list of seven nations in Joshua 24, verse 11. The Girgashites are included there among those whom Joshua fought against and who were delivered into his hand by Yahweh. And in Acts 13, turning to the New Testament, Paul's recital of Old Covenant history includes this statement. And when he had destroyed seven nations in the land of Canaan, he distributed their land by allotment. That seven nations is certainly a reference back to that prophecy in Deuteronomy. So on the whole, I think the evidence suggests that the Girgashites did fight against Israel and were defeated under the leadership of Joshua. That they are not mentioned in Joshua 12, and in fact are never mentioned in subsequent Israelite history, may be due to the fact that they were either utterly destroyed, that is, they were completely wiped out and none remained to carry on the name, or perhaps they were diminished in such a way that they simply assimilated into some other nation and lost their own identity, their own significance. In either case, Yahweh led Joshua to either destroy them or to drive them out. Now, beginning with verse 9, we get a list of 31 kings who were conquered, and each one is linked with the city of his rule. We don't get the names of the kings here, as we did back in chapter 10, but we get the places where they ruled. The list begins with the first cities that were conquered, Jericho and Ai. Across the Jordan, their first victory over Jericho, then they had that defeated Ai, followed by a great victory over Ai. After that description, the chapter follows a general south-to-north orientation. The kings of Jerusalem, Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, Eglon, and Gezer were all mentioned in chapter 10 in the context of the southern conquest. Remember, Adoni-Zedek, the king of Jerusalem, entered into coalition with these others to seek to cut Israel off at Gilgal and to defeat this interloper in the land that was a threat to them. And so those nations are listed here. Others previously mentioned in the southern campaign are scattered throughout the list in Joshua 12. That's Debir, Libna, and Machadah. But then there are also in this chapter, we have cities mentioned that have not been mentioned previously in Joshua. Those in the south would include Gager, Horman, Arad, and Adullam. Some of these cities are mentioned in subsequent biblical history. For example, 2 Samuel 22 and 23 tell us that David sometimes hid in a cave in Adullam. And so these names do recur, at least some of them, in different places throughout Scripture. So first of all, after the initial entry, they go to the south and they discuss all the kings that were defeated in the south. And then they shift a bit north to the central area. And they mention Bethel, Tapua, Hefer, Aphek, and Lasharon. And of these, only Bethel has previously been mentioned. And this expanded list lets us know that Jericho, Ai, and Bethel were not the only central cities to be conquered by Israel. Remember, we pointed out previously that what is described in these chapters in Joshua is not a full and exhaustive account of the conquest. And it didn't go nearly as quickly as we might think it went simply by reading these chapters. It's estimated that the conquest took perhaps 5 to 7 years. And during all that time, these various cities and these kings were being defeated. Then beginning with verse 19, the kings of the cities in the north are listed. And the first four formed the northern coalition against Israel that we read about in Joshua chapter 11. Madon, Hazor, Shimron, Meron, and Akshah. And after this, we hear of the kings of Tanakh, Megiddo, Kadesh, Jokdeam, and Carmel, Dor, Gilgal, and Tirzah. Tirzah actually is in the central mountainous region, north central mountainous region, not quite as north as the others. And again, some of these are mentioned other places in the Bible. Notably, Tirzah is immortalized in the Song of Solomon, where the beloved says, "Oh my love, you are as beautiful as Tirzah." So Tirzah must have been a pretty beautiful city if it's going to enter into love poetry and to tell your love that she's as beautiful as this city. I haven't tried that. Maybe will sometime. Now, it is easy to get lost in this long list of kings, but its inclusion in Scripture is important. The picture that emerges is that the conquest involved much more than is narrated in detail in Joshua 6 through 11. There would be a story to tell about each of the cities listed here that was not previously mentioned. There were many battles. They went on for a long period of time, but in all of them, Yahweh was faithful to his promise to deliver the land into the hands of Israel. As the first part of the chapter reminds us, this included Transjordan as well, those tribes that settled east of the Jordan River. Through the human leadership of Moses and Joshua, the Lord fulfilled the land promise given to Abraham centuries earlier. And these victories continue to be celebrated in Israel, ever reminding them of Yahweh's might and faithfulness. Consider, for example, Psalm 135, verses 10 through 12. As this psalm reviews some of the great history in Israel, we read in these verses of the Lord, "He defeated many nations and slew mighty kings, Sihon, king of the Amorites, Og, king of Bashan, and all the kingdoms of Canaan." There's Joshua 12 right there. Sihon, Og, all the kingdoms of Canaan. "And he gave their land as a heritage to Israel, his people." As such reminders fortified Israel's faith, they should do the same for us. These past victories of our God can give us confidence in his future victories that are yet to come. The commentator Ralph Davis comments, "Since chapter 12 serves as a summary of the conquest today, we can rightly hold that as such, it foreshadows the coming of Yahweh's victory. The victory of Yahweh achieved over Sihon, Og, and Canaan's kings is both a preview and a pledge of that time when the kingdom of the world will become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." That's Revelation 11. Every one of Yahweh's victories over his enemies in the process of history is a partial portrayal of his victory over all his enemies at the consummation of history. That this is meant to seal and strengthen his suffering people as they long for that grand finale. Well, as we learned in Psalm 22 this morning, looking back at Yahweh's past victories and deliverances can give us confidence for the battles we face today. So So may the record of Joshua 12 do that, both to strengthen us today and also to encourage us as we look forward to the Lord's final victory yet to come.